Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating Atlanta's heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of Atlanta's elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. Hey, Sam.
Good morning. How are you, Brad?
I'm doing all right. We have Lee Cantor here as well, our producer. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, guys. How are things?
Things are great. I was driving in this morning, and it was dark, and it kind of surprised me. But it reminded me that we are actually changing time this Sunday.
So. Oh, really? This is the big weekend?
This is the weekend, Saturday night. Get an extra hour of sleep.
An extra hour of Halloween, that means, right?
There you go. Well, we got a great show lined up this morning. We have three guests. Our first guest is Sharon Hansen from Gwinnett Medical Center, Glancy Rehab. The second guest is Adrian Simpson, President and CEO of Smooth Move. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning.
And we have, thirdly, Jacqueline Evans from Compassionate Hospice of North Georgia.
Our first guest is Sharon Hansen. Sharon is a clinical evaluator from Clancy Rehabilitation Center. Good morning, Sharon. How are you?
Good morning, Sam. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Sharon is originally from Louisiana. She attended University of Georgia, obtaining her undergraduate degree and two master's degree, the last being in rehabilitation medicine. Sharon, your undergraduate degree is somewhat different from your current profession. Tell us how you made that transition.
Well, it's been a circuitous but educational route. My first degree out of school, job out of school was with the University of Georgia Cooperative Extension Service, and I used all of the skills that I had used. It was basically a home economics degree, and I used that in running a 4-H youth program and also working with consumers in my county. I then transitioned from that to working for the State of Georgia Vocational Rehabilitation, and I once again used my skills in working with blind and visually impaired people and teaching them how to do things without sight. From there, I went to work for a private medical equipment company and then another rehab facility in North Georgia, each time building skills that I had on top of other skills. And eventually I wound up at Glancy Rehab Center, and I'm using every skill that I've developed in all of my different careers and in my schoolwork as well. So it's been a fun and interesting journey.
It's a very diversified career path, and yet I'm sure it's been very rewarding for you. Sharon, tell us a little bit about your current employer and your title is clinical evaluator. Tell us what a clinical evaluator does.
Okay. Well, I work for the Gwinnett Hospital System, and under that we have an acute rehabilitation center known as Glancy Rehabilitation, and it's been around for, I think we just had our 21st anniversary, so it's one of the oldest acute inpatient rehabs in the state. What I do as a clinical evaluator is when our center gets a referral from a hospital outside of our system, I go to that facility, that hospital, I review the chart, I gather all of the clinical information, which is very important since we are required by federal guidelines to follow certain types of guidelines that make sure that the patient is appropriate for our program. I talk with the family, I talk with the patient, I explain the program, I explain what's going to happen, and then I go over all of this information with my medical director, and he ultimately makes the decision about whether the patient is appropriate for us or not. So I am his eyes and ears, and I'm also the information conduit for the family and the patient who is requiring rehab. So to me, it's a very interesting job, and I really like it.
That sounds very interesting. You used a term, Sharon, that intrigues me. What does acute facility, what does that mean?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. There are two types of rehab, inpatient rehab facilities. There are acute and subacute. Acute takes place in a hospital setting with hospital-type staffing and under the supervision of a physician on a daily basis. The patients are all seen daily by a physician, so they have to be ill enough to be managed medically by an MD, but also be in a position where they require therapy. Therapy in an acute rehab is also more aggressive than in other types of rehabs. A patient in our facility would need at least 3 hours a day of therapy, and that includes physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, therapeutic recreation, neuropsychology, rehab nursing, those types of things. A subacute facility, on the other hand, is one that is less intense medically and also less aggressive in therapy. And it's kind of like comparing apples to oranges. They're both fruit, but they're not exactly the same thing, and it's the same with the rehabs. There are very definite cases where patients should be in an acute versus a subacute. And with the federal guidelines that we have, it's pretty spelled out for us what kind of patients belong where.
Sharon, is it possible for you to tell our listeners what a typical patient might look like that would be in an acute facility versus subacute?
Well, first of all, I will tell you that we are a certified stroke specialty center. So one of the things that we do very well is take care of patients who've had strokes. That is one of the top diagnoses, admitting diagnoses to our rehab center. Some other types of patients that we see include those who've been in multi-trauma, for example, in car accidents, amputations, hip fractures, maybe exacerbations of a chronic illness like MS. So patients who have physical illnesses that need to be carefully monitored by a physician, but also need the rehabilitation component as well. Those are the kind of folks that are best served in our facility.
Certainly addressing someone's need when they most need it. Sharon, what do you find the most rewarding aspect of what you're doing?
Well, a lot of times when I walk in to talk with a family and a patient, the family is just totally panicked. Especially for something like a stroke, this is something generally totally out of the blue, something they didn't expect it. And one minute their loved one is walking around doing things, the next minute they're flat on their back. They may be paralyzed on one side. They may be unable to speak. So it's really hard for family to see the light at the end of the tunnel. When I go into a room, I'm able to offer them hope. I never offer guarantees. We can't do that. But we can offer hope and to see their eyes light up and realize that there is an option, that there is something out there, really makes it nice for me to go home at the end of the day because I feel like that I have really helped put people in a position where they can help themselves.
Sharon, is there a story that you can share with us about some of the amazing things that you've seen while you've been there?
Actually, I have thought about that since we last spoke, and I have a story to share with you. Without mentioning names, so as not to violate any HIPAA guidelines, I can tell you, I attend church with a couple. The lady is the one that mainly attends, but her husband had a massive unexpected stroke and required emergency surgery. While he was still in the critical care unit, I was asked to come see him and assess him for possible admission to the rehab center. He appeared to be a likely candidate, and when he got to the place where he was ready to leave the ICU, then he was going to transition to our rehab center. In the meantime, one of the many physicians that was caring for him had told him and his wife that he would never walk again. That's pretty devastating. I think he felt like it would be a kindness to them just to prepare him. but I don't think he quite knew who he was talking to, because that was a very hard-headed patient who didn't want to hear that. After he was in the rehab center for quite a while, worked very hard, he transitioned to our outpatient comprehensive program, and finally he got to the point where he could take steps. It was just one of those things that you just kind of hold your breath when you see it, because it's like something so unexpected. Well, he had been attending church since he had left rehab, and always came in his wheelchair. His wife rolled him in. One day, he rose from his wheelchair, and he walked, not very well, not very steadily, but he walked to the communion rail. The whole church was in tears, because it was truly one of those things that is just a miracle. And I don't take any credit for doing that. He did it himself, but we did provide him the means to get that rehab to get better. And that's just one of those things that that takes your breath away and puts a big smile on your face.
I'm sure.
So that was a very positive. I'd say that was a good outcome.
A very rewarding
story.
Yeah, story. Very rewarding experience. Sharon, very quickly, is there any special organization or cause that you are associated with?
Well, one of the things that I volunteer to do, and now it's just become part of my job duties, is I am the coordinator or facilitator, whatever you'd like to call it, of the Gwinnett Parkinson's Disease Support Group. And basically, I just pull the programs together and send out notices. I try to keep the folks informed of new things that are coming down the pike, new medications, research studies, and I've been doing this for about 5 years now, and I've become quite attached to my to the people in my support group. They're just a tremendous people who are fighting a serious degenerative neurological condition, but they're living with it. They're not dying with it, and that's an important distinction in the folks that come to my group are just amazing people, and I'm very, very fond of them.
That's interesting. Sharon, if there's one piece of advice that you might be able to give us for our aging and disabled listeners, what might that be?
Oh, I have a two-pronged piece of advice. The first one is, what is the plan? If you're senior, if your parent, if your husband, whoever becomes seriously ill and unable to care for himself or herself, who's going to handle the situation? What's going to be the senior's wishes? Who's going to carry those wishes out? Who will provide for unreimbursed care? What's the plan? And now is the time to make the plan before the crisis hits. And the second part of that piece of advice is, when you get a plan, make sure everybody that would be important to knows what the plan is, and most importantly of all, write it down. Make it official. It avoids so much conflict if you can do that prior to the situation. You wouldn't believe some of the interesting things that we've seen at the rehab center with families fighting over who's going to make decisions, and it actually happens more in very large families. Where there are many children. So it helps to just have something in place prior to the situation occurring.
That's a great great piece of advice, Sharon. Tell us how our listeners may contact you if they're interested in the Parkinson's Disease Support Group or just in services at Clancy Rehabilitation Center in general.
Well, I'd be happy to. My email is S. Hansen, and Hansen is spelled H-A-N-S-E-N, at GwinnettMedicalCenter.org, or they can call me, and my phone number is 678-312-6175. Give me a few days, because I'm not in the office every day. If I'm in the office, I'm not seeing patients, so I will generally get back to you in a few days, though.
Sharon, we certainly appreciate you being a guest on our show today. We thank you for your information, and have a good day.
Oh, well, thanks, Sam. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Take care.
All right.
Our next guest is Adrienne Simpson. She is the president and CEO of Smooth Move Senior Relocation Services. Welcome, Adrienne.
Thank you for having me.
Senior Relocation Services. It's not something that maybe everybody thinks of when they think about moving. Tell us a little bit about what you do and how you came to do it.
Well, first of all, the Senior Relocation Services, we do everything for a senior that a loving family member would do. And a lot of folks say, what's so special about moving a senior? Well, if you give some thought to what it would take to move your granny out of a house she's been in 40, 50, 60 years, well, first of all, you need dynamite to blow her out of it. And then once you get her out of it and to her new place, you know, what are the steps? And so what my company does is we do the on-site consultation, the packing, the sorting, the tagging, the home transport, the unpacking, hang the pictures, the drapes, make the beds, go back, do an estate sale, antique appraisal, cleaning, clearing, home renovation, just everything that's involved with moving a senior, because when they move, they do it differently than others. They downsize. They don't take everything with them. And that's what makes moving seniors different.
Wow, it sounds like a lot of work.
It is. I love it.
You know, I know that you came to this out of a personal experience. Tell us a little bit about that.
The personal experience is I used to work at Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Michigan and woke up one morning and I was downsized and divorced all at the same time. And so I said, wait a minute, I don't have a job. I don't have a husband. Why am I still here? So I packed up and I moved to Georgia. And when I came, I brought the only grandchild, which was my daughter. She was 4 at the time. Well, my mom, and I love her absolutely to death for doing this, said, I'm not having strangers raise my grandbaby. She sold her house and followed us to Georgia and bought a house. When my daughter turned 17, mom says, okay, you all don't need me anymore. I'm going back to Michigan. Well, I had suddenly been downsized again.
Yikes.
Yes, downsized again. And after the being downsized a second time, I said, okay, enough is enough. I'm not doing anything, for one. Let me help mom, thinking she would move the same way that I would, which was basically put everything in a box, put it on the truck, and send her on her way. And that's not what happened. Mom surprised me. She, when I said I'll do it for her, she said, great, now here's what's going to happen. I'm taking this, I'm selling that, and I'm giving that away. And me thinking, okay, there has to be someone that can help me with this, I went to the Yellow Pages and opened it up, and there was no one company that could do everything. And again, loving mom the way I do, I wasn't going to have my mom handled just any kind of way by 6 different companies. Smooth Move Senior Relocation Services was born.
So you specialize in just seniors?
Well, seniors, folks with disabilities, and folks that are over 55, because that's the key point. After 55, people move a little differently. We spend our lives, when we leave our parents' homes, we spend our lives nesting. I call it nesting, collecting, feathering our nest. And then after a certain age, the kids have moved out. It's just you and the hubby. You say, wait a minute, do I need all of this? And what we fail to understand is that all these things that we spend our entire lives collecting hold responsibility. You know, you either have to clean it or do something. Well, after 55, folks say, well, I don't need all of this. Let me get rid of some of this and, lose some of this responsibility that all of these things hold with them.
Is this harder for the kids or for the senior?
It's hard for both. It really is because, well, first of all, seniors don't move because they want to. They move because they have to. You know, they've had some sort of a life-changing event. Their health is failing. The house is overwhelming with responsibilities. They've lost a spouse. And a lot of times, too, they're in a house and they're isolated. They can no longer drive. And so they are no longer part of a community. It's hard for the children also because the children have their emotions and memories tied up in a house. So it's emotional and it's hard for everyone. What we bring to the process is we let them forget about all the responsibility and work tied to those things where they can support each other emotionally as they go through this, because this is another step in our life transition that many people miss. Years ago, no one thought about moving to a retirement community. A retirement community was a nursing home. hardly anyone goes to a nursing home anymore. It's to a retirement community, and to go there, there's a lot of work involved in that.
You made reference that seniors move differently, i.e. they downsize. How is it that you assist in making those decisions about what to keep and what not to keep?
Well, what we do is I will a lot of times go out and personally meet with the senior and their family. And we are in just about every retirement community in Georgia. And so if they tell me the community that they're moving to, if it's a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, I already know the dimensions. I don't have to go see it. And so I will help them to decide what they're going to take with them. At minimal, of course, we're going to take the bedroom set. But past that, I look for things that are going to be functional, that will serve a dual purpose, and I allow them a few pieces that make no logic whatsoever. They're just tied to emotionally, because we're asking them not only to give up their things, they're having to give up the house. So, you know, we try to make this as painless for them as possible, and by letting them take a few things that are just purely emotional, it helps to make that transition a little easier for them.
So you're not just a mover, you're also a psychologist.
I didn't realize it when I started doing this. I'm a trucker. I didn't realize when I started this company that I was becoming a trucker, but I am. Yes, I'm a mover, registered with the Georgia Public Service Commission, U.S. Department of Transportation, Motor Carriers Association. I am a trucker. So those 18-wheelers you see rolling down the highway, that's me. And in addition to becoming a trucker, I'm a negotiator, arbitrator, a peacemaker, just everything. And I tell a lot of my clients when they call, which is another thing that I discovered. When I started the company, I thought seniors would be my clients. They're not. They are the end user. Their children are my clients. 99% of the time when the phone rings, it's the children that are calling me. And they say, Mom and Dad have decided to move. They told me to make it happen. I have a life. You do this. And so what I tell them is, well, as you're working with Mom and Dad, you've successfully cleared the biggest hurdle, which is the decision to move. Don't fight over the stuff.
Excuse me, Adrian, what are the three general moving tips that you might give a senior, advice that you might give to a senior?
Well, the biggest tip I would give anyone is to start early. And a lot of folks say, well, why start early? It's a small move. You start early because it's not, again, it's not the stuff. It's the emotions. And you need to start early enough to get involved, especially the seniors. I see so many of my clients contact me when they are in crisis. And crisis is, okay, Mom fell, broke her hip. She's getting out of the hospital. She's never going back to that house again. We've already picked a place where she's moving to, so let's go grab a few things and take them there. That's crisis. And Mom is going to take so much longer to transition into that new place because she's not been involved. So one piece would be to start early. The second piece of advice, like I said before, don't fight over the stuff. Let me do that. I will come in. They will. It's just been my experience. Seniors will fight tooth and nail over a huge china cabinet that won't fit with the kids. And everyone's all stressed out and upset with each other. I walk in and tell Mom, the china cabinet won't fit. It's not going. Argument over. So they will listen to me because I don't have an interest in their things, whereas everyone else has an interest in their things. And then the third piece of advice is to try to make the event memorable. If you're going to be participating in the sorting or the organizing, do it just 2 hours a day, because as you go through it, there are going to be things that are going to stir up memories. And so I tell my clients, 2 hours a day, you find something that stirs up memories, and it's not going with you, savor the memory, grieve over having to release that item, and then do something fun. And, you know, make each event memorable. Celebrate the house. Before you move out of the house, plan a potluck or something. Invite the family, friends, the neighbors over. All of these pieces of your community that you're going to be leaving for a time, and video and just celebrate those things that you're going to be leaving behind.
That's great advice. Adrian, how can people get in touch with you if they want to?
Well, we have a website, and the website is www.wemoveseniors.com. They can also contact us by phone, and the number is 678-476-666.
Terrific. Thanks again for being on the show with us, Adrian.
Thanks for having me.
Our next guest is Jacqueline Evans from Compassionate Hospice of North Georgia. Good morning, Jacqueline.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jacqueline. This is Sam. You have a kind of a interesting background. You grew up in Rhode Island. You are the daughter of a career Navy man. Attended North Georgia College with obtained a degree in marketing. Tell us how you came to be in your current position.
Well, before I did hospice, I did home health for about 2 years. And during those 2 years, I was always like, I would never do hospice because just like others, many other people in the society have misconceptions about what is hospice. So I actually sat down with Steve Morris, who's the president of Compassionate Hospice, and he educated me on what hospice really consists of and the benefits that the patient gets and the caregivers.
And why don't you tell our listeners what hospice is and the benefits of it?
The biggest misconception is that hospice is a place, and hospice is not a place, it's a concept of care. We bring dignity, hope, and love to people of life's final journey. Hospice is appropriate when curative measures are no longer effective for a terminal disease. Each patient on hospice will be assigned a nurse, a social worker, a chaplain, and a CNA. Usually, they say for a patient to see the full benefits of hospice that the patient should be on service for at least 3 to 6 months, not just the last week or two of their journey. So we promote quality of life and not quantity of life. We always say that hospice is for the living and not the dying.
And is this, I know you said it's not a place, but where is the care delivered? Where is it delivered?
The care is delivered wherever the patient calls home. So wherever their bed is, basically. It could be a nursing home, assisted living, or their own private residence.
Can it move between the two? Because sometimes a person will go into a hospital and then come back home.
Yes. We do not care for the patient in the hospital. So if they went from the hospital to a nursing home and then feels like they want to go back to their private residence, then we can help move them.
Jacqueline, tell us what makes Compassionate different from others in this area.
I believe what makes Compassionate different is that we are not a national company. We're more small. We started in Cumming, and now we service areas south of Atlanta all the way to the North Carolina line. And we're more of a family. We know everyone in the company, so if I have a problem, I can go directly to that person.
Now, when you're a person using hospice, are you assigned one person that's the primary caregiver that's sticking with the patient, you know, until the end of the journey?
I'm sorry. What was the question?
How does it work from the patient standpoint? Is there one person assigned to them?
There is a POA, which is their primary caregiver, and they is usually a daughter or a spouse of close family member, or can even be a friend that they have assigned. And we work with the caregiver to relieve the stress of caring for that patient. So we do a lot of social working with that caregiver because, hospice is not just for the patient. It's a lot of family support, and it's helped getting them prepared for this final journey also.
Jacqueline, it seems to me that obviously you're dealing at a very stressful time, and with that has to come issues, but I will assume there are rewards in doing this. Can you tell us about some of your experiences in that arena?
It's always rewarding once you sit down with the family and you actually explain to them what hospice is, and you see a little bit of relief in their face. But helping the families cope with the caregiver, the families cope with caring for a loved one with a terminal disease, because it's not just the patient that needs support, but it's also the caregiver. So that's what I find most rewarding about this job.
Great, great. Tell us, is there a special organization or cause that you are involved in or interested in?
There are so many, actually, that we are affiliated with and that we work closely with. So it would take all day if I went through them. The most recent one that I worked with is I raised money for Strides and participated in the Strides Against Breast Cancer Walk last Saturday in Atlanta. And we walk in honor of our past and present patients.
Can you tell us just a little bit about that organization?
Strides, it's walking for a cure for breast cancer. So they raise money and put it towards finding a cure for breast cancer. I think there was at least 10 to 20,000 people walking the streets of Atlanta with us.
Do you have any idea how much money was raised for that cause?
I do not know, since it is only Tuesday and it was on Saturday, so I don't know how much we raised altogether.
Well, that's a great cause. Tell us, Jacqueline, if you had a piece of advice to give our aging and disabled listeners, what might that piece of advice be?
That you're not alone. There are resources out there available to you, and a lot of families are just afraid to ask their physician. And their physician has so much information available to them. I always get, I wish I would have known about this sooner. Because a lot of the time I do come in the last few weeks when the family and the patient could have been benefiting from hospice 6 months or on. So my advice would be just ask your physician, ask for help and research.
You know, this is Brad. It seems like there is a common perception out there that hospice is for the last 3 or 4 days of someone's life. How do you get the message out that this is not just for the last 3 or 4 days, but actually, you know, for the last 3 or 6 or more months?
Well, it is very hard, and I find that to be my biggest obstacle out there when I'm educating, because I get it a lot. They think hospice is just for cancer. And it is for the last week or two of their life. When it's not, it's when you have a terminal diagnosis and you opt out of doing curative measures. So let's say the chemo is not working, and then that's the next step would be hospice. And we don't have to come in every day. We come in as much as they want and as much as they need. So I can come in once a week with a nurse and once a week with a CNA, all the way up to 5 to 7. So it is a big obstacle trying to get out there and educate people that they should ask if they're not doing any curative measures for congestive heart failure, COPD, but there is help out there, and you don't have to wait.
Jacqueline, that's great. I know that you have a interesting story about one of your clients. Could you tell us about that?
Yes. I have so many nice stories that I get to bring home with me, but the one that sticks out the most is I had a little patient on service last year, and in her time of need, instead of just sitting home and concentrating on herself, she wanted to volunteer for our company. So, you know, of course I couldn't have her driving home to home, so we brought arts and crafts in to her. And she sewed us memory blankets and memory teddy bears for patients' families and put together flower arrangements for us. So even in her time of need, she was thinking of others. And she passed away about, I believe, 8 months ago now.
The patient becomes the provider.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Jacqueline, tell us how our listeners can contact you and Compassionate if they would need to.
Okay, we have a email. You can look us up. You can email us at info@chcng.com or call us at 678-717-0969, and you'll be talking to a live person, and they can answer any questions that you need and direct you to their right resources.
Jacqueline, I really appreciate you being on our shows. It's great information. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that's our show today. Thank you to Sharon and Adrian and Jacqueline. We appreciate you being here in the studio with us this morning. Thanks for tuning in. If you to listen to this website or to this program online, go to EugeriaRadio.com or also alternatively to BusinessRadioX.com. And remember, if children are our nation's greatest asset, seniors are our nation's greatest treasure. Tune in at the same time next week for another great edition of Eugeria Radio.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and is recorded in the Business Radio X Studios.